Why make a big deal about your name? Well, for people from diverse backgrounds, it can be the difference between getting a call for an interview or not getting a call. A University of British Columbia study that sent thousands of resumes to Canadian employers found candidates with English names such as Jill Wilson or John Martin received 40% more calls for interviews than identical resumes with names such as Shana Khan or Lei Li. Changing or altering your name is just one example of what racialized and Indigenous people might feel they need to do to fit in. But what kind of engagement does a corporation get when employees are holding back a fundamental part of who they are? About two decades ago, we began to see studies that showed a clear link between diverse and inclusive organizations and strong financial performance. This led to growing corporate interest in diversity and inclusion. A few years later, there was heightened corporate focus on gender diversity. And now, recent events have finally made space for frank conversations about race and ethnicity in the corporate world. Terms like Black Lives Matter and social justice are beginning to make their way into corporate boardrooms. In today's episode, we talk to Sandeep Tatla, Vice President of Diversity and Inclusion and Corporate Social Responsibility at Point Click Care. Sandeep and I talk about her career and what it means to have diverse and inclusive corporations where employees feel a deep sense of belonging. Sandeep, thank you for joining us today. Why don't you start by telling us more about yourself and your career?
Sure. Thanks, Shilpa, and thanks for having me join today. Whenever people ask me about this, it's really hard for me not to start really early on in my journey, which would really be sharing that I am a daughter of two incredibly hardworking parents who immigrated to Canada back in the 1970s. I start there because I do think that experience of being a child of immigrants and seeing them work hard was really drives me as the type of leader I am today. And really, as I think about being a global leader in D&I, a lot of that early experience really shapes how I lead. More formally, my leadership journey has been interesting. I actually started my career practicing labor and employment law management side at a boutique labor and employment law firm on Bay Street. And it was a good career. It was interesting work. And I did focus on human rights specifically because that's where my interest has always been. I've always had a slant and interest in social justice issues. And so what fit at the time was having a practice that focused on human rights in the workplace. And this, I think, was one of the most pivotal points in my career. I soon started to feel like I didn't really fit that role and it wasn't really what I wanted to do. But I did see an opportunity as I spoke to my clients who were struggling with different issues of harassment, workplace stress. And as I started to dig down and look at some of the core issues that were leading to some of these issues that were leading to human rights complaints, I realized there was a real opportunity to do work with organizations around how do you actually create cultures that are respectful and that are inclusive. At the time, the firm that I worked at, we did a lot of training with organizations around, you know, how not to get into trouble with the law. And so what I proposed was doing some work more on helping organizations with that. And I had said, you know, I'd love to be able to talk a little bit about the business stuff so that they're not getting themselves into legal problems. That wasn't really supported by the firm. And so there was the opportunity to really think about what it was I wanted to do with my career. And I took the plunge and left the practice of law to start consulting on my own in the D&I space. And this was now, I think, 12 or 13 years ago. At the time, you know, I think there weren't very many people who had diversity and inclusion as a formal role in an organization. So reflecting back, it was quite a bit of a risk. But for me, I saw an opportunity. I felt like I could provide added value to organizations. And so I took that plunge. And it worked out really well for me. I ended up consulting for a number of years. I got some really awesome clients, did some really great work, and then had an opportunity to go in-house at PricewaterhouseCoopers to build and design their diversity work. And subsequently, I've done that at a number of different organizations. And today I am the Vice President of Diversity, Inclusion, and Corporate Social Responsibility at a technology organization here in Canada, Point Click Care.
Please, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about like when you started. It was still relatively new. The understanding and leadership around diversity and inclusion was limited. And so what changes have you seen since, I guess what you had said is 13 years ago, you started to really support organizations in developing the or in creating inclusive cultures. What changes have you seen? How are we progressing on the path to creating inclusive cultures where employees feel like they belong?
You know, if I think back to when I first started, there was still a lot of focus on building this business case. And at the time, there was, I would say maybe, I remember maybe one strong research out there, and I remember being, there's this Harvard Business Review article that really set out the link between diversity and business performance. But it was really, the conversation was based more on like, to get the right talent, you need to sort of make sure that you're, I'd say, fishing in all the ponds, right? Instead of going to one pond. And it was really, especially in the Canadian marketplace, it was a conversation around there's going to be looming talent shortages. And if you only look for one particular type of talent, like if you're only looking for white men, you're really narrowing your chances of getting good talent. It was really based on those kinds of conversations. I think over the years, with the abundance of research now out there that supports how both diversity and inclusion, and I think it's really important to stress that it's not just the diversity itself, although research does show just having a diverse group pushes us to think a bit differently, present our work differently. But the inclusion piece or that sense of belonging where you feel safe really drives that business advantage. It's clear. That research is clear. And I think now these days, I think it's understood. I think 13 years later, most people understand that there is a strong business case to diversity. So I don't have to spend as much time making the case for it. The other thing that's really changed, and I'll say, I think it's really only recently changed over the last 6 to 7 months, is it is now okay to use language like social justice, you know, Black Lives Matter. I mean, I can tell you that I have, over the years, people have asked me if it's okay to even use the term Black, right? And corporations were having difficulty, I would say last year, using the term Black Lives Matter. And social justice, like, you know, what role does an organization play around social justice? And I think now it's becoming more clear that there's an opportunity for organizations, and not only an opportunity, but there's this responsibility that organizations have around social justice. So that is evolving really over the last, I'd say, 6 to 7 months, like following George Floyd, the kinds of conversations that are happening, the language that's being used. We have not focused on racial inequality as much as I think we should have over the last number of years. It's something that I have tried throughout my career to work on, but the appetite has never really been there. And the focus has predominantly been on gender equality, which is important, but the layering on and the intersectionality around race and, you know, even other sexual orientation, ability, we haven't really got there. We're getting there. We're getting better at it. But there's been a big change that way.
And it's interesting because I've always been nervous about our focus on diversity and inclusion has been really gender and the fact that we haven't actually recognized that diversity extends beyond gender has always made me a bit nervous. And I was in a meeting that was hosted by a bank that's based in a European bank based in Europe, and their head of HR, when we asked about, well, where's, you know, race, ethnicity, and other types of diversity in the conversation, why aren't we seeing it? And her response was that the conversation around race makes people very uncomfortable. Do you think it's the same reason that we've been so resistant, and you've had to really push to add the various different lenses on diversity?
I think it's really nuanced. I think it's hard because when you think about racial diversity, there's different challenges that are faced by different groups across the racial spectrum, right? If you think about the challenges faced by Black Canadians versus the challenges faced by Asian Canadians, we definitely all face challenges because there's a racial hierarchy, but they're different. And I think it might be the articulation of that. It might be that it's difficult to kind of bring that to bear. And separately, we're different groups. And so to have that conversation has been more difficult. I'm going to maybe be a little controversial in this, but I also, if you think about organizational diversity, and we're talking about corporate Canada, let's say, if you think about those who have power within corporate Canada, we have seen that women, and it's white women, who've been able to progress to leadership levels. I'll say the majority. I'm not saying it's that people of color have not made it to those levels, but larger numbers of women have made it. And once you get to a certain level, it becomes easier as a leader to influence the conversation around things that you think are important. And so gender diversity, I think, has made it to the corporate levels and the conversations because women have been able to navigate to more senior levels. I'm not saying that women have made it and are there, but there is more in numbers. And so you're able to then influence the conversation and create space for that. I think for racialized groups, there has been a challenge around that because we are now, I'd say, starting to make more leadership ranks. And there have been leaders in the past for sure, but they have been, the numbers have been small. And I can talk a lot about sort of, you know, as a person of color, a racialized person, how you've had to navigate to even get to those levels and how you start to disassociate at times with those groups in order to survive. So, a complicated answer for a complicated issue, but I think some of that we do have to examine around why the conversation around race has not made it to the boardrooms in the way, not saying that we aren't talking about race, but in the way that we need to in order to really make some palpable change.
There are racialized individuals who are moving up in organizations, but navigating that journey to position of influence has an impact on their identity and how they work within that environment. Can you touch on that a little bit more or speak to that a little bit more?
In order to really fit in and move up, a lot of times people have to shed parts of their identity in order to fit in, right? And so if you think about diversity and inclusion and authenticity, there's a lot of work around the link between creating a culture where people can show up as their authentic self, and that really cultivates a culture of inclusion. So the opposite of that is the culture of exclusion breeds conformity. You know, if we think about the way that you might talk, the way that you might talk about different things, like what you talk about. So you end up talking about sports, hockey, like hockey, golf. You talk about your cottage. You talk about the things that the dominant sort of white group would talk about, like the type of music you listen to, whether you actually listen to something at home, but what you actually talk about when you get to work, right? I have also seen where people have told me this, leaders, is that, for example, if there's employee resource groups, for example, if there's a Black employee resource group and you're looking to get more leaders involved in that, I've had leaders share with me that they may not feel comfortable getting involved because they don't want to be associated in the same way, right? They know that there's negative biases that attach to people of color or different groups. And so try to stay as far away from that so you don't start to get associated that way. And you also definitely don't want to be the poster child for diversity when you get to that. A lot of leaders, when they get to that level, don't want that attention on them because they're just really they've learned how to navigate the system in a particular way, and now expecting them to start to be and do something different or kind of bring their authentic self out. It's difficult to expect that of them. And so it's just the reality. And actually, there's some theory, and I don't remember what it's called, but there's quadrants around how people actually deal with issues of, I'd say, oppression or racism. And so one, there's those who are really activists who stand up against it. And so those, you might think of the kinds of people protesting in the streets, right? That's how people react. Other people react by putting their head in the sand and pretending like nothing is happening. Like it's just too painful to really address and understand. Then there's systems navigators, which is probably, I think, where I fit in, which is where I understand that there's a system and how do I navigate that system? And in my case, try to disrupt some of that system in order to make change. And then there's those who just accustomize and become part of that system.
And so what has your experience been like in this field? I can't imagine it. I can imagine it being relatively complicated. In times, I would think it could be exhausting.
Yeah, so exhausting is probably a really good way to put it. I'm not immune to understanding that the biases and structures that I'm trying to change also impact me directly and how I'm viewed, the opportunities I have, the way I'm able to navigate and not navigate an organization. So completely understand. And again, I'm not alone. I've got, you know, having done this work for years and having had, even now my role is sort of is North America focused, but I've had a global role, is that this is a common sentiment, and you've probably seen the research, but there is a lot of research around the role of the CDO and is it rightly positioned and rightly funded, and the level of exhaustion and turnover of people in this role. A lot of times, because they are people of color, or, you know, women of color who are in roles and so are navigating this themselves, trying to navigate the system that they're trying to change. So absolutely, like I have the kind of things I have experienced microaggressions. I also have experienced people being really dismissive of my abilities and thinking kind of the work that I do is just fluff, and not recognizing, you know, that doing this type of work is really change management type of work, and it really requires keen sense of influence within organizations and systems and how to change them. I've been fortunate in a lot of my roles. I've had good relationships with folks at the senior level. You know, even now I've got a great opportunity, and I work closely with our CEO, and that allows me to actually lean into the credibility of others. And that's probably one of the tricks that I've learned over the years, is how do I actually build the right relationships with those who actually have influence and power, and try to leverage that, understanding that I myself may not have that, right? Which, as I say it, is a bit sad, but it is what it is, right? I think I look at myself as a change maker and a catalyst for change. And so my end goal is to make that change in the ways that I can best.
What do you anticipate for this topic in the next 5 years?
So, I mean, I'll pick up on your thread of change, and then I'll go to where I would love to see us go. So, you know, I've had the vantage point of working for a large multinational and trying to make change. I've had worked in sort of quasi-public government, like government type of organization, and then, you know, professional services and consulting. And then also now I'm at sort of what I'd call a scale-up, right? Moving from not startup, but to really becoming a larger company. So I think change on this front is hard in any of those organizations. I think for sure in a larger organization, it is much harder, because there's different cultures within those organizations, right? The large organizations. So it is hard to make that happen. So that, I think that's a baseline. I think you're right, probably in some smaller, like if I think about now being in the scale up, which is consistently under transformation, because that is the energy of the organization. there's greater opportunity because there's greater opportunity to be, you know, we keep hearing the terms agile, but not until I worked in a technology type of environment did I really understand what that really truly means to be agile and move quickly. So there are some companies and some workspaces that have inherent advantages to try to move things forward if they invest in this in the right way. So I'll say that. But in terms of where I think there is some real opportunity with the energy that's been created, not only with the Black Lives Matter movement, but also the fact that as companies, corporations, they have been able to quickly transform to evolve to the changes coming out of COVID. Like companies within days have been able to fully go remote where, you know, they hadn't ever been able to do that before, right? So starting to think a bit more radically different, that muscle has been like awakened for a lot of different organizations. So because in my view, what really needs to change is for sure there's a lot of behavioral work that we need to do, which is the longer haul work. But there are systems and in processes that we can start to change, I would say deconstruct and reconstruct in ways that are more inclusive. Like if we think about how we hire, like question, why do we do it the way we do? How do we do it? Do we need to do it that way? How do we do it so it's more inclusive? Performance management, right? You know, how do we identify who is high potential and why they're high potential? Can we break that traditional way of doing things to make it more inclusive, right? And I think even if you think about the crux of the Black Lives Matter, it's like our systems, there's a lot of systemic barriers that are not intentional that have been set up where the outcome is inequitable for many. So for me over the next 5 years, how amazing would it be if we're able to start to address some of those systemic challenges that are actually leading to inequality and break them and do them different? And I think we're at a time and place where the energy around trying to do some of those things differently can happen if we're open to it. The fact that we can now talk about it and it's not, we're not talking about it with just each other. We're able to talk about it with white men and white women and kind of feel comfortable to challenge some things. Like that is huge because I feel for a long time, we've just, for whatever reason, and we talked about that before, haven't felt empowered to be able to own our own experience and speak to it.
Sandeep, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us and the experience that you've had over the years in this field. I think it's incredibly interesting for people to hear about as the focus heightens on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yeah, I thank you. I appreciate you spending time with us today.
Thank you, Shilpa. It was great to chat with you, and I really appreciate your insights and your dedication to this work.
The world is changing quicker than ever before. We don't know for certainty what will happen over the next few months or the next few years, but we will continue to adapt and share stories of strength so that we come out on the other side as a more inclusive, kinder, and understanding society. Thank you for listening. I'm Shilpa, and you've been listening to Her Climb. Did you enjoy the show? And you might want to subscribe to Her Climb podcast so you don't miss an episode. Her Climb podcasts come out every week in our very first season. Thank you.